returns to WPFW beginning Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. with Music Memories, the best of old school from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yes, the return of Alvin Nedab on 89.3 WPFW FM, Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday at the same time all over the world. And for our buddies, friends, and listeners, and for those men and women confined inside of the correctional facilities, thank you for your comments, your emails. We really appreciate you communicating with us, and we try to bring you information that would help you in your day-to-day living. We're going to pass on Crossroads this morning. We have an
interesting...
We're going to pass on Grapevine this morning. We have an interesting show. We're coming to you live from Martha's Vineyards. It's a town hall reparation meeting. So Nikichi, Taifa, Mertin, and I, we are broadcasting live from Martha's Vineyard in a little town called Oak Bluffs, with a history of that goes back a long ways. People of Afro descent first arrived at Martha's Vineyard in the 1600s as enslaved West Africans who worked on the farms of European settlers. The Oak Bluff Harbor drew freed slaves, laborers, and sailors in the 18th century. We're in a historic Black community up here in Martha's Vineyard, and they have a reparation town hall meeting this afternoon at the Loft Above Chowder Company, 9 Oak Bluff Avenue. If you're in this area and you want to come by for this reparation conference and workshop, we on the panel of Mertin and I, and along with our distinguished co-host, Nikichi Taifa, we want to say thank you for tuning in. And now we have, we'll look at who our guests are for this morning. The topic for this morning is reparations now. Our guests are Sakia Sakara Jabbar, co-founder of Racial Justice Now, Christy Williams. I can't pronounce her middle names. I'm just going with Williams, community advocate. Thank you for tuning in. And of course, directing this show this morning is none other than the world famous Nikichi Taifa. Good morning, Nikichi.
Good morning, Roach Brown. Good morning, Mertin. How are you all today on this historic day?
Yes, yes.
So we're in Martha's Vineyard.
Nikichi, we just got back in town. We went to North Carolina for a family reunion, Mertin's family reunion. And joining us on the phone is one of the producers, Mertin's cousin, Faye Hauser Price. If you see her, she's been in several movies through the years, so she's well known and still beautiful. thank you for joining us this morning, Faye. And while we're doing the live broadcast, they're filming this for a documentary on Mertin's family, the Williams Hauser.
Hauser Williams Russell. 109th family reunion was held this weekend in Yadkinville, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Our grandma, the baby of Bethania, who was the first baby born from the slave master, she married. Then it was a Williams marriage. Then it was a Russell's marriage. And my grandma, who lived to be 104 years old, Dixie Jugurtha Russell Moore.
Okay.
Yes.
So we spent the weekend down in Winston-Salem, and now we're up in Boston, Massachusetts. Our show now, Mike, the engineer who's listening, it's gone global. Not only are we got listeners and supporters of our show worldwide, but we're bringing a show to you from different locations from time to time. We did it from New Orleans a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. We move around. So today we're coming to you live from Martha's Vineyard. It's a town hall reparations forum, the history in the making. You add your voice to history in the making and join the Martha's Vineyard Town Hall reparations discussion. And we have some interesting guests. And I'll throw it back over to our distinguished co-host, Nikechi Taifa.
So thank you so very much, Roach. And welcome, Faye, because your whole story, your story and Mertine's story and that whole family fits very squarely within this issue of reparations and justice and family descendants and repair and healing and all of the above. So I'm just so very thrilled that you are here and you're going to have a film, a crew filming this as part of a larger documentary that you're doing. And why don't we just start with you? Because one of our guests just dropped off and we're waiting for her to come back on. I know there's a lot of noise in my background. I'm outside and there's the water and the wind and all of those wonderful things. So Faye, tell us, first of all, tell us about some of those films that you have starred in and why you felt it was important for you to have a crew out here filming this historic reparation town hall on Martha's Vineyard.
Well, thank you for having me, Nikechi. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I did not know that I was going to do this, so I'm glad that I put myself together this morning. But I am an actor, a producer, a director, and a writer. I starred in Roots, The Next Generation, if anybody saw the Roots saga. And it was a wonderful experience for me. I was the school teacher that taught three generations of the Haley family, which is an important part of our establishment in this country, because we were not allowed to read and write. And so education was a paramount topic in the film. And it is a paramount topic in our family. So it's strange how these things sort of come together in these circles around. So a little bit more background about me. I was in The Young and the Restless as the detective Selena Wiley for about 5 years. I was in JoJo Dancer with Richard Pryor as his first wife. Most people know me from Good Times. I did an episode on Good Times called JJ's Ulcer. I gave JJ an ulcer because I was married and he was going with me. Which
JJ,
very scandalous. Very scandalous.
I want to see that one too. With JJ, come on now.
It plays all the time, all the time.
You can find Faye now on Bed and Breakfast. Is that the name of it?
Yes. There's a movie. There's a movie on Tubi called Bed and Breakfast. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of Bed and Breakfast on Tubi, but if you look my name up, Faye Hauser, you'll see a couple of projects on Tubi that I've been in.
All right. Thank you. And we're glad you're joining us, because we were together in North Carolina just a few days ago. So, boy, you got us being world travelers. thank you, Faye. I mean, because we got your crew here now, the film crew. Like I said, this is historic. It's momentous. That's a new word I just came up with, momentous. You know.
And also the important thing about it for this particular broadcast also is your family, and your family of which Mertine is a family member of, which means Roach is a family member of. And, you know, when we talk about families and descendants and the enslavement period and the Jim Crow apartheid period, et cetera, et cetera, all of this is wrapped out into the issue of reparations. And I want to introduce right now our guest, our phenomenal guest, my dear sister, Christy Orishabiye Williams. She is a descendant of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. Tulsa, Oklahoma, y'all, remember that. Yeah. Her great Aunt Janie Edwards was in the Dreamland Theater. She was there in that theater when the massacre occurred. And for anyone who saw, I guess it was Lovecraft Company. The other movie. It's starring Regina King. My brain is gone dead. But anyway, it started out with the Dreamland Theater and people huddled in there while all the white terrorists are around terrorizing the community. Well, my dear sister Christie's great aunt was there in that theater when the massacre occurred. But she's also the great-granddaughter of Creek Freedman and the great-granddaughter of Cherokee citizens. She's a prominent community activist in Tulsa, Oklahoma. She is an award-winning National Geographic advisor and former chair of the Greater Tulsa African-American Affairs Commission. And she was the mover and shaker behind the successful election campaigns of council member Vanessa Hall Harper, who's also here in Martha's Vineyard for our reparations town hall. But Christie also is a member and organizer of the 1921 Tulsa Mass Graves Investigation Committee. She's the author of the book Healing Me for Me, and she's worked with LeBron James, Spring Hill Company, CNN Films documentary Dreamland, The Rise and Fall of Black Wall Street. She's appeared on ABC's Soul for a Nation and the Who We Are Project, a chronicle of racism in America. And most importantly, last but not least, she was recently selected as a wayfinder with National Geographic. It is her goal to stand with her ancestors in order to leave this world better than she found out. How you doing, Christie?
Good morning. I'm so excited to be here and just to be in the presence of Miss Faye Price. I'm like, wow, it's amazing.
Hey, in your presence.
Crossroads this morning. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, why you're in Tulsa and why you felt it was important to be part of this reparations town hall here on Martha's Vineyard.
Well, you know, I truly believe the ancestors have me here for a reason. As you know, I was here for a fundraiser for my fellowship, my Berlin fellowship in Germany, which I was here Friday, I've been here since Friday. And then when Nikichi, when I told you about it and he said, well, we're going to have this reparations town hall. And I'm like, I'll be there. So I came on, and anytime you call me, you know, I'm going to come. But it's so important that we all play a part in this movement for reparations, and especially as it relates to Tulsa and being a 1921 Tulsa race massacre descendant.
Okay, yes, indeed. And one of the things I meant to mention also, because all of everything that's happening here fits very squarely within the issues of justice and the issues that Roach Brown highlights as part of Crossroads, we're going to, there's a direct line, direct connection, connecting the dots between what's going on today now with the criminal punishment system and what happened yesterday in the enslavement era and the Jim Crow apartheid era and the police lynchings and, recently, the latest victim, we're talking about Sonya Massey. I mean, the dots just connect. And there will be a special posthumous tribute as part of this town hall to Professor Charles Ogletree. And I raise that because he wrote a book about lynchings, talking about the issues dealing with the death penalty. He was very much involved with the criminal punishment system. He was very much involved as an attorney seeking to get people released from imprisonment. And he was very much a fixture here on Martha's Vineyard, having forums on criminal justice throughout the years. He was one of the attorneys early on of the Tulsa survivors lawsuit, along with what was the famous brother who just passed a while ago? Oh my God.
Johnny Cochran,
right, my brain. Along with Johnny Cochran back in the day. So this is going to be a special tribute to Charles Ogletree. And there also is going to be a special featured guest speaker in addition to Christy Williams of attorney Margaret Burnham, who's a distinguished professor at Northeastern University High School Law School, Lord have mercy, and the founder of the Civil Rights and Restorative Justice Project. And she is the Senate confirmed nominee to the Civil Rights Cold Case Records Review Board. So all of this is injustices from the past that we're seeking to bring to light. Christy, can you just give a little bit of background on, because there might be some people who just might not know about the Tulsa 1921 race massacre, a little bit about that, and maybe a little bit about the mass graves.
Mm-hmm. So the 1921 Tulsa race massacre occurred May 31st through June 1st, 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. What a lot of people don't know that before Oklahoma became a state in 1907, it was still considered Indian territory. And so a lot of us, like myself, who's a Creek Freedman descendant, we were allotted land. And so, as you know, like my great-great-grandfather, he came on the Trail of Tears as a slave to the Creek Nation. We were emancipated June 14, 1866, a year after the national Juneteenth celebration. And I'm saying all this because it gives context to how Greenwood started. But when we became emancipated, and just a few years later, you know, we got equal rights to the tribes, which included land. And so we all had 160 acres of land, and which is how Greenwood started. It was an allotment of land, but it was a safe haven. It was called the Promised Land. Actually, Oklahoma, the Indian territory, was called the Promised Land because all Black people wanted to come and live in a place where they didn't have to worry about lynchings and, you know, things like that, because the only people who could own land in Oklahoma were Natives and Black people. White people had to have a permit to live in Indian territory before 1907. And so Greenwood was a prosperous place. And just 6 months before the massacre, the Sons of the Confederacy actually had their convention there. And they told the mayor at the time, said, how can you let your niggas live like this? They seen how Black town was prosperous and doing well. And then so then 6 months later, here comes this incident with Dick Rowland in the elevator with a white woman named Sarah Page. Now, we know through 1919, Red Summer, a lot of these massacres that happened in Black communities were always the story of a white woman being attacked. And so that was the excuse that was used to burn down 40 city blocks and murdering hundreds of Black citizens in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And my church that I attend, Burnham, Vernon AME Church, African Methodist Episcopal Church, led now by my pastor, Keith Rodell May Sr., we were the only edifice that survived the massacre. The basement survived. And so you had a lot of people from Greenwood who came to hide there in that space. So it served as a refuge. And they were able to survive, those who were able, you know, to stay. And so that's a little bit about the massacre in a short amount of time that I can give you.
Yeah, that was very, very helpful. And I was in Tulsa not too long ago, and you were doing a tour of the one of the grave sites. And can you speak to something about this mass graves and even about that particular casket where, well, it wasn't a casket or whatever, that the guy was too large to fit in, or say something about that. And then I want to turn it back to Roach on some specifics with respect to this, because so Roach is going to be part of what we call a witness panel. But go on, my sister Christy.
Yeah, so as Nikichi said, I do serve on the Mass Graves Oversight Committee. And actually, the way that this investigation started, it started actually with Charles Ogletree, Johnny Cochran, our former state representative, Don Ross, they wanted to do a mass graves investigation then, but the mayor turned it down. The city councilor who's here, Vanessa Hall Harper, and myself, we actually took some shovels and stood at this particular mass grave. We have a few mass graves throughout Tulsa, but this particular one we stood on with shovels, and it made the front page of the Washington Post through journalist Deneen Brown. And that's what our mayor decided to do this investigation. Well, they were only looking for 18. And they were only looking for this particular 18 because there were 18 that was actually documented. So the city didn't want to be responsible for hundreds, right, of bodies. So they were looking for these 18 that were documented. But the way these ancestors called out, when they started to dig, we found more than the 18. We actually, to date, it's 65 bodies that we have found just in that one location of the mass grave. And the day that I was there, because we had an opportunity to volunteer, and they wanted volunteers to come out because what they discovered is as they were bringing remains up from the ground, soon as it would hit the air, they would start to disintegrate. So they put a makeshift lab like a half mile from that mass grave on the property. And so they decided that we should carry them in these makeshift cardboard coffins. So we carried them in a pallbearer fashion. But the day that I was there volunteering, I had children. I transferred 10 bodies. Eight of them were children, two were adults. As the anthropologist said in the reports, the children range from ages 3 years old to 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
And the, and I'm sorry, it still always chokes me up when I think about it, because I will never get those images out of my head. But we prayed for each of them and we sung as we carried them to the lab. And we made a commitment. And when we were in the lab, we did a more of an intimate prayer and made a commitment that we will find out who they belong to through DNA so we can give them a proper burial and then also to start the road of justice. Well, there was the two adults that I also carried. One was a woman who still had some fetal skeletal remains still attached, well, around her, basically, in the grave. And so they determined that, or they discovered that she was pregnant when she was stoned into the grave. But there was one man who I immediately knew he was really large because his femur was really large. And they had him in a box. It was weird. It was like an old box that was tearing apart. But they had him scrunched in there. It looked like they broke him up to put him in this box. But the anthropologist said he was 6'5". And it was a box for someone like my height, and I'm 4'11". So just imagine that visual. And so we are, you know, we actually had a meeting a year and a half ago after this, because the city wanted to rebury the remains that they pulled out. And we said, no, it's too premature. We haven't done the DNA testing on everyone. And so we voted unanimously to not to do the reburial. That was on a Tuesday, a 3-hour meeting. That Friday morning, we get a call that they're reburying the victims and putting them back into the mass grave that we pulled them out of. And they actually had a man in a kilt playing a bagpipe, which is not the way our lives are, you know, our ancestors. And I was just appalled at that. And the fact that I made a commitment to those children that I carried, that I would, you know, find out who they belong to and start on this road of justice. And I had those babies in my hands. I had them in my hands and they took them away from me again, just like that. And so
took them.
I haven't had another.
Who took them away from you?
The city of Tulsa. So we haven't had another meeting. As you've probably seen in the news, they did discover that one of the remains was actually connected to the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. And they said that he was also a veteran, a World War I veteran. And so let's see what happens with this. But again, the thing remains, how can we expect the perpetrator to investigate itself in a situation like this.
Exactly.
So this is still something going on, and I think the world needs to know about it. The world needs to gather together and fight about this, because our people are still in that grave. And these are not just my ancestors. This is every Black person's ancestor that is still in this mass grave. And so I just want to do a rally call to get people upset, because we need to be upset about it. And we need to do something about it. And the way that we do this is by coming together to do something about this, because it's long overdue. And hey, I've been Christine,
let me ask you this. How does reparation play into what we're talking about, the 1921 massacre in Oklahoma? And you said something about DNA. How do you propose to conduct the DNA over 100 years later? What are y'all going to do, get DNA from all the Black citizens in Tulsa and match them up with the remains that were dug up?
Absolutely. And anyone who doesn't live in Oklahoma but has family ties to Oklahoma, I think they should be a part of the DNA, because we have descendants all over the world from Greenwood. And it's so important that this is, I mean, the time is now. I call Greenwood the Valley of the Dry Bones, like in Ezekiel, because the bones been crying out for so long. And now you actually have the land has been calling out. A friend of mine, Dr. Alicia Odewale, who's also a National Geographic explorer like myself, but she's an archaeologist, one of the few Black archaeologists. She did a study in Greenwood, and she did this study on this hill called Standpipe Hill, where the rich people, rich Black folks lived in Greenwood. And it's owned by OSU Tulsa, Oklahoma State University. And she actually got permission to do the study there. And they said, well, go ahead. You're not going to find anything. Well, oh, did she? When she went there, she found out there's these trees, and these trees are called hackberry trees. And hackberry trees are the trees, the first trees that actually grow back during a forest fire. But they have a unique skill when they grow back. When they grow back with like this thick, ugly bark on them that they use. This is a protection to insulate itself. So it remembers the trauma of what happened to it. And so these trees are exactly 103 years old, the year of the massacre now, 103 years old. And what they're doing is the roots are coming up, are bringing up artifacts and foundations out of the ground to where they said nothing was there. Now we know that something was there. So what she was able to do was get these maps and Sanborn maps, those old Sanborn maps, and she found there's a Creek Freeman school, the homes that was there, and these trees are bearing witness to what was there and to what happened. So now you have the land crying out, and if the land is crying out, we got to be crying out too. And so that's why I say we all have to get around this issue.
That's great. I was going to ask if an archaeologist was a part of the team, so it's wonderful that you have an archaeologist there to
Yes, and I would like to input a good friend of mine, Julia Wilson. She was born in Tulsa. She has Wilson Global Communications. She said they did not learn anything about Tulsa when they were in school.
That's right. I didn't either. If it wasn't for my Aunt Janie, who I got to know, she passed away when I was in the seventh grade. And as you know, across a lot of states, including Oklahoma, they've banned the teaching of Black history. So I started my own school last year called Black History Saturdays, where we have a whole school day on a Saturday for pre-K all the way to adults. And this is how I got awarded from National Geographic. And now you have over 100 banned books in Oklahoma. You have the books that I was told to read in high school, like The Lord of Flies, A Raisin in the Sun, the autobiography of Frederick Douglass, the Diary of Anne Frank. You have all of these books are banned. And so I started my own library this year called the Banned Book Library, which sits within my school. And so we're able to check out all the banned books to the community and to the participants who are there. And so it's important that we do this work. And I was spending a lot of time trying to fight my governor. And I said, you know what? I'm not even going to fight him, because why do I need him to teach our children? we need to do it ourselves. And so I want to take that back. And so that's what I'm doing.
That's great. Right. I'm out here in North Carolina, and I turned on the local television station, and they are doing a study because Wilmington, North Carolina, was governed after during the Reconstruction era by Black people, and they had, it was burned down in the 1890s prior to what happened in Tulsa, and they were calling it a race riot. So now they have evaluated that, and they are calling it a coup because it was taking down a government that was working. So thankfully, we are in an era where these investigations are coming to light and we are getting the truth of it, and not the, you know, it started because some Black person looked at a white girl.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is WPFW-FM, your station for Jazz and Jesses, 89.3 on your radio dial. WPFW, your station for Jazz and Justice. We live in a country that not only is banning books, but not banning guns. This is the country we live in, people. So understand, this is not anything new. This is what we were born into, this country that wants to ban true Black history, good and bad. It is our responsibility to make that not happen.
I want to add this to it. You mentioned that earlier, Christy, about what was going on in Tulsa, race riots. And we here now coming to you live from Martha's Vineyard up in Massachusetts, from Oak Bluff. And this, too, was a Black community.
Yes.
Oak Bluff was founded or started in 1600 by slaves, free slaves that came up to Oak Bluff.
Yes.
And we're talking about books. We did a story a few months ago. Did you believe there's 50,000 books that are banned in prisons and institutions? And no telling how many books is on the list in Florida and in Texas. And back in slavery, it was against the law for us to read. Somebody to teach us to read, write. Yeah, 100 years later, we're going all the way back to, why are you going to ban 50 books? There are some prisons, believe this, that ban the Bible. And the reason given is that the Bible has too much sex and violence in it. So you were denying men and women the right to read, to educate themselves 100 years ago in slavery. Now we're coming right back to the same thing. Our kids can't read about the autobiography of Malcolm X or Miss Jane Pittman.
Right.
Kind of books, Man, Child, and the Promised Land. Mm-hmm. I was in prison and wrote a play, and they took my play and said that it's not mine. Nobody in the prison claim ownership or authorship of this play except me. And the warden them told me, there's nothing in your jacket to prove that you could write a play. And they confiscated and took my play. And I said, why? They said, because it's written on government property.
Mm.
And I never got the play back. So this kind of abandonment or abolishment or punishment is re-emerging all over again. Kids are being denied the right. Nikichi got a couple of books out, and her books are even banned inside of facilities. So this thing, the meeting, this reparation town hall this afternoon in the Martha's Vineyard is crucial, is vital. And if you're in this area, folks, please come by and participate. But I want to throw in one last thing before I throw it back to Nikichi. Is that, go ahead, Nikichi, you got it.
Yeah, no.
Later.
Well, I just wanted to say that testimonies such as what Christy just provided, testimonies such as what Faye provided, and about the Wilmington bloodbath, where they, it basically was a coup d'etat of the elected government, multiracial government, actually, and basically told them, you be out of town by sundown or we're going to kill you. And they left the property, they left family. I mean, what was done with something? I just want to say, Mamie Till Mobley, the mother of Emmett Till, she said, open up the casket. I want the world to see what they did to my boy. So it was because of her, and what we are doing right now, we're opening up these caskets, these abuses that are happening or have happened in our own backyards. And Roach, you are going to be part of a distinguished guest witness panel to officially witness and receive town hall testimonies today, such as what Christy talked about. And joining you on that distinguished guest witness panel will be council member from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Vanessa Hall Harper. There will be Robin Imani Prouty, who's executive director of the Descendants of St. Louis University. There will be Tony Kaufman, who's the president of the NAACP at Martha's Vineyard. There will be Zakiya Sankara Jabbar, co-founder of Racial Justice Now. There will be Caroline Hunter. If y'all know anything about Martha's Vineyard, you know about the polar bears, okay? She's a luminary on the island and really the lead of the Martha's Vineyard polar bears. That's a story in and of itself. Kathleen Anderson, who's the co-chair of the New England NCOBA, National Coalition of Black School Reparations in America. Christina Hook, who is the Equinaw Wampanoag Tribal Elder. Deborah Jackson, who's the managing director of the Center for Law, Equity, and Race at Northeastern, and Jemadari Kamara, who is the Africana Studies professor at UMass Boston. So, Roche Brown, you're part of that mix as well, and we will hear testimonies from people who have come either from across the country or right here on the island in terms of joining in, being a part of letting their voice be heard as we are in the process of history in the making. And I just want to say one more thing and then turn it back to you, Roach. This reparations town hall is hosted by the Reparation Education Project, the organization that I lead. And part of my team is Billy Wilkinson, who's managing director of the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center at Howard University Law School. Aziza Robinson Goodnight, who's founder of Repair America, a collective. Makani Themba, who will be facilitating the Charles Ogletree Ceremonial Tribute. She's a chief strategist at Higher Ground Strategies. Rochelle Vicky Brown, who's a resident here at Martha's Vineyard, Imani Prouty, and so many more people who have come together to make this success. And let me tell you, it's sold out. But even though it's sold out, I mean, it's free, but the Eventbrite is sold out. Come on and come along, because we got some corporate sponsors that support the issue of reparations. Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream is going to be giving away free ice cream at this event. Lush All Natural Cosmetics, another supporter of the issue of reparations, will be giving out free Lush cosmetic giveaway. So, you know, this is like a all-encompassing, so they're going to get education, information, going to get yummy for the tummy and yummy for the skin.
Sounds good.
Yummy for the tummy. I'm waiting on that one.
Now, I'm sure audience members, you want to call in. Maybe we can get a call in. The number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893.
And let me throw this in, and that we're talking about reparations, and everybody normally assumes we're talking about money or equity. Something that's being missing in the whole reparation argument, been pushing for mass release. If we're asking for reparation, we're asking for all of us to be compensated for the injustices that have been done to us as a people. Also, the incarceration is a part of this mass reparation that we should ask for mass release. Particularly because right now we saw the Supreme Court, how crooked their ethics is, out of order. Yeah. And you think the Supreme Court is the right place to go. Man, it's the same old jiggy boogie. I don't care what role they have or what title they have. Jiggy boogie is jiggy boogie when it comes to us. So this whole thing got to stop. We're pushing to have mass release to be included in this reparation, because they're locking up the fastest growing prison population in America is black women. They're locking up more black women, black mothers and grandmothers. That's unbelievable. So if we ask for a mass reparation, if we're going to the table, we ask for all the food. Don't give me I'm up in Martha's Vineyard, and everybody, the first thing I told my buddy, we're bringing a show from Martha's Vineyard. He said, you can get tea and crumpets, are you? I say, no, we're going to have biscuits and Kool-Aid. We don't eat crumpets. Yeah. So we got to make sure that this is included, because we're talking about reparations. What are you asking for reparations, Christy?
So let me, before Christy spoke, let me just say, Roach, you're absolutely correct, because repair of the criminal punishment system is one of the key demands that we talk about when we talk about reparation. It's not just a chat. The harm
in
slavery era and beyond, the harms were multifaceted, but the remedies must be multifaceted as well. We have educational inequities that need to be repaired. We got health disparities that need to be repaired. We have justice issues that need to be repaired. We have cultural issues that need to be repaired. And of course, the white, black, white wealth gap. Yes. So it's all encompassing. Okay, I think that you was about to say something, and then back to you, Christy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm doing this documentary on my family. My family is celebrating 109 years of family reunions this year. It started in 1915, celebrating the 75th birthday of my great-great-grandmother, Bethania, on the 50th anniversary of Emancipation Proclamation. So my great-great-grandmother was enslaved to my great-great-grandfather. She had three children. After her enslavement, she immediately married a Black man, and they had four children and gathered that family together. He died, and she married another Black man who had four other children. That last child of that relationship is Mertine's grandmother.
Oh.
Great grandmother. So each one of these families blended, but they all came through different eras of the social and racial pressures of our country. And each of those families had different things that they should get through reparations. So there's as you were saying, Nikichi, there's a lot of repair that needs to be done. And the repair is colored by different experiences that we've gone through over the years, up to the present, where we see someone who has called for help and gets shot because she was holding a pot of boiling water. So there are all kinds of remedies.
She wasn't even holding it at the time she was murdered. She wasn't even holding it. Your hands were up.
How do you put someone who didn't grow up with us, doesn't know us, you put someone over us with a gun and a badge? That's what prison is. Black men getting paid pennies, producing all of these garments out here, Victoria's Secrets, and Black men taking them away from their family is enough, and then you're going to only pay them pennies for what they're doing all day? Of course the Black family is in dire poverty.
You know, this whole reparation, I'm glad you clarified that, Nikichi. It includes every aspect of our lives in this country, and the abuses and the degradation that we've been going through here in this country. And the main thing is for us to come together. But when you talk about books and you got men, we had a guy on the show 2 weeks ago, Dr. Stanley Andres. He did 10 years in Missouri State Penitentiary or prison. His father had diabetes. And when his father came to see him, and when he saw his father was sick, he went back and started researching diabetes. As a result of that, he started sending for medical material. He went to college, got his degree, and now he got a PhD in medicine. Mm-hmm. And he got a program called From Prison to Professional, where he got a dozen or two inmates from prison to PhDs, not a GHD, a GED is a janitor's job. You work at McDonald's. A PhD, you can be the CEO. You can run and own stuff. You can make intelligent, meaningful decisions. So having these kind of discussions, and everybody will know we do criminal justice. Everything that affects Black people has a relationship with criminal justice. 7 out of every 10 Black men in America has a criminal record or a conviction. So that means 70% of our population now, because of females, Black females are being the number one locked up persons in America. Prisons is intricately interwoven within our structure, our culture. So if we don't have something that makes sure that those men and women and young kids get released or get meaningful justice, because the Supreme Court just sure, I keep hopping on the Supreme Court. I'm hopping on. They are the Supreme Tom. I'll say it.
Supreme KKK. That's what it is.
And these things that's happening right now, I had life, and I filed a motion to try to get out of prison, and they turned me down. So my only hope was to go to the Supreme Court. I filed my papers to the Supreme Court, and they said, we don't want to hear it. Here's the only court that I had left. And they said, you got life, do it. But they made a mistake. They make no difference about what mistakes they made. So out of 1,000 petitions that are submitted each year to the Supreme Court, they only hear 8 or 10 cases. And you think the Supreme Court is the ultimate rightness. They're going to right whatever wrong is done. That's jiggy boogie. They're just as crooked as everybody else. So we got to make sure. Let me shut up and take our first call.
Let's take that call.
We'll take our first caller. You on the air, please. Question or comment?
Oh, good morning, my family, the satellite lady.
Oh, well, hello, satellite lady.
I'm calling because all the things you all are talking about this morning is the Gardner's truth. You know, I grew up around 14th and U Street and all around Georgetown. That's right, with your buddy Peter Green and Georgetown. And I worked with my team. I remember when the urban renewal was coming. It was urban removal. And everything. I seen
my urban removal,
and basket. And another thing, like that lady, just what you now talking. Okay, up here in Montgomery County, the black graveyard up there on River Road, black people had all that property too. That was another urban removal. Lincoln Park was where Obama's pastor, Jeremiah Wright, got started at. Yeah, Jeremiah Wright, Mount Calvary Baptist Church. All that black community wiped out. It was an urban renewal. Every black community I don't went to, historical, a wealthy community, and thriving and whatnot with intellectuals and professionals, doctors, lawyers, it's gone. Ever since we joined the damn Democratic Party, and I'll tell them to their face. They betrayed us and give all these other people that ain't pick a nut bog or a cotton our benefits. Now, okay. And another thing. What's her name? Henrietta Lex, the stem cell lady over there.
Henrietta Lacks.
Okay. Henrietta Lacks. You know, money. Thanks right. A lot, satellite lady, because we always can depend on you. We got a couple of minutes go to the left before we leave. Krista, you want to give us some closing comments and before we close?
Sure. I want to say thank you all for having me on, and also that you know, one of the things that I've loved about this reparations movement is that it stirs up something in me that I call reparations liberation and reparations education. And I say that because this movement to me has also showed me the things that we need to take back physically and that we can do in a tangible way, such as like starting Black History Saturdays. I come from those ancestors of Greenwood who left the blueprint on how to create an economy within an economy. And if they could do that then in the face of lynchings and Jim and Jane Crow, we can do that right now with all our degrees. And
there you go. You're right.
Right. I heard Dr. Daniel Black from Clark Atlanta say, you know, in 1860 through 1890 is when all of the HBCUs were created, majority of them, and they were created by ex-slaves, some who didn't know how to read, some who barely knew how to read, and if they could create those institutions then,
yes.
Why in the hell are we not doing it now?
There you go.
And so it's so important that's why it's important that we know our history, not that we just learn about Harriet Tubman and Dr. King, though they are important, but we have to study Black history.
Yes.
And we have to study. There's a difference between learning it, and there's a difference in between studying it.
Okay.
And so we have to study it because it shows us the power that we had, what we did, what we can do, and what we can be. And without that, we are just going to keep finding ourselves in these same situations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Christy. Thank
you, Christy. We have to apply.
Wait a minute. We got a minute or two to go. We want to let Nikita close it out, Faye. Go ahead, Nikita, close it out. Wrap up on the reparations this afternoon.
Thank you so much. I just want to remind everyone today, Tuesday, July 30th from 2 to 4 in Martha's Vineyard, the Loft Above Childhood Company, 9 Oak Bluffs Avenue, Oak Bluffs, Massachusetts. Add your voice to history in the making. Join the Town Hall Reparations event on Martha's Vineyard. We will be featuring Christy Orizabia Williams, who you just heard. We'll be featuring Attorney Margaret Burnham, but we want to feature you as well. And I'm so glad that Faye Hauser Price is going to be there to document it. We will also have a videographer. We'll have a complete video available for folk of the Pacific. And Roach and Martine, we're so glad you're here and are going to be part of this effort. Reparations now.
Thank you. And we cannot get off this call without mentioning presidential candidate Kamala Harris. We can do this. We can do this. We must do this. There's not an option. We see where we live, be real, and where we're going is up to us.
Thank you. Thank you. You've been listening to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday here on WPFW, 89.3 FM, heard around the world. Thank you. And our guest this morning has been Christy. I can't pronounce your middle name.
Orisha B.
But I'll say Christy Williams, my sister.
Yes.
My brother.
Faye Hauser Price. To Faye and her film crew that's here now filming us. And we want to thank him. In fact, we had a friend's house on the water, the Seneca River. And it was Indians up here called the Seneca Indians. And everywhere, America was all Indians. So wherever we go, it's Indian country.
Yeah, you know? Native.
So yeah. People, come together. If you're here, come out and participate in this reparation meeting at Town Hall we're having this afternoon. Here at Martha's Vineyards, and just say, this is tea and crumpetsville, but we eating biscuits and Kool-Aid. I want to thank you for listening to our show. We'll see you next week. This has been Martine and Roach and Nikichi. Remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
When the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day. When the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh,
glory, glory.
Now the war is not over, victory isn't won, but we'll fight on to the finish. And then when it's all done, we'll cry glory, oh, glory, oh. We'll cry glory, oh, glory, oh.
Selma is now for every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. The biggest weapon is to stay peaceful. We sing, our music is the cuts that we bleed through. Somewhere in the dream we had an epiphany. Now we right the wrongs in history. No one can win a war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes,
is attorney Nikichi Taifa, and I am thrilled to host a new talk show entitled Human Rights and Justice. Join me every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m., starting September, as I feature insightful commentary and stimulating guests discussing domestic and global themes encompassing political, economic, and social rights. Get up and stand up with me, Nikichi Taifa, Wednesdays, 5 p.m., for Human Rights and Justice.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
From Rahsaan Roland Kirk to Asada Shakur, WPFW has been your go-to for cultural and political education since 1977. Your contributions have allowed us to uphold the mission of liberatory media set forth by our founders. August 11th through the 24th presents another opportunity to support WPFW during our summer pledge drive. Donations can also be made anytime at WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
African Diaspora International Film Festival and Africa World Now Project hosts the 17th Annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, D.C., August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center, featuring fiction and documentary films, receptions, and Q&As. ADIFF DC from August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center. Tickets and schedule at nyadiff.org or 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black Life Matters. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Code Pink, Women for Peace, is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes!
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of D.C. communities east of the river on To the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Albert Hedab returns to WPFW beginning Monday, July 29th.
2 a.m. till 5 a.m. with Music Memories, the best of old school from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yes, the return of Alvin Nedab on 89.3 WPFW FM, Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Dr. Theodore Watkins, the program is to your health.
Join Dr. Theodore Watkins on Mondays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. on To Your Health, as he teaches alternative medicine to alleviate illnesses using a holistic approach.